Welcome to Conscious Bridge Radio, the program where we explore the evolution of spirituality, politics, and culture. Now here is your host, the author of four books, including Be Yourself and Our Spiritual Evolution, Mark Gilbert.
Thank you, and welcome to Conscious Bridge Radio. I'm your host, Mark Gilbert, and today our show is entitled Awakening to Spiritual Freedom. It's a conversation with spiritual teacher Locke Kelly. Locke's the author of the new book, Shift into Freedom, The Science and Practice of Open-Hearted Awareness, which we'll be discussing today. He teaches meditation and psychotherapy and is the founder of the Open-Hearted Awareness Institute. His book bio describes him as, quote, an emerging voice in modernizing meditation, social engagement, and collaborating with neuroscientists to study how awareness training can enhance compassion and well-being. And I think we'll get a little bit into that today. He's got degrees in psychology and spirituality, and he studied with a well-known spiritual teacher, Adyashanti. I just finished reading this book, and I got to say, I highly recommend it as a practical guide to getting out of your head and moving into your heart. It gives quite a bit of background into science and the philosophy of his thought processes, but the book is chock full of what he calls small glimpses, little examples that you can use to try to get out of your head and tap into this voice and aspect of freedom that is within us, the true awareness that we're going to be talking about over the next few minutes. So links to his book as well as to Locke's website are available on the radio website page, but it's Locke Kelly, LOCHKELLY.org. Welcome to the show, Locke.
Thanks so much, Mark. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Listen, I've got to ask you right off the bat, you know, what was your reasons for writing this book? What were your intentions and why were you called to put this together?
I mean, I'll give you the short answer, which is, you know, just wanted to let people know the water's great. Come on in. So,
and now the longer answer.
Now I'll give you the longer answer. That just came up to me. So the longer answer is that I, you know, had a series of shifts and a kind of heart's desire to follow some unintentional ways that some sense of joy and peace and interconnection opened to me early in my life. And I wondered whether that was a state or whether that was actually the foundation of who I was, to which these other crazier, you know, darker weather patterns were actually the states. And so it, you know, it was while I was in college, so I started there with teachers and books and kind of an attitude of investigation. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't lead me in a very religious way. It led me in kind of a spiritual, scientific, open, investigative way to look at many different traditions and many different modes of learning until I continued and started to investigate internally and went to graduate school as well as then on fellowships to India, Sri Lanka, and Nepal, and trained with many meditation masters, and came back and then worked in kind of the inner cities for a few years, helping the homeless, and felt like that was kind of a natural progression at that time to give back and to work with people who were less fortunate. So it's been quite a journey, and this last piece of creating this book was really to make it very simple. What are considered advanced practices are fortunately very simple, though not initially easy because they're paradoxical. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, trying to give a context and bring this way of shifting into this natural joy of being to people who are suffering and those who kind of have tasted this freedom and want more of it.
So your path really was, as a psychotherapist, you were probably more in the traditional mainstream in terms of scientific materialism and but you had a bent within you to study awareness and the consciousness and the deeper side of life, as I would call it, the non-material side to a degree.
Yes. So there's always that dance between the two. I always felt from the beginning there was both.
You know, I can say the same for myself. I remember many years ago I was a psychology major, and you know, the parts of it that I liked were the parts that got into consciousness and the stuff that was really more about the mystery of life.
Yes.
And there was a book by Robert Ornstein called The Psychology of Consciousness many, many years ago, which opened my eyes to the fact that, hey, psychology can be more than Skinner and rats in a maze.
That's right.
So, but we were working with people then who, you know, often are going through challenges in life and suffering. And so part of your book is driven from your own experiences, but I gathered that part of it was probably designed to assist people who are moving through their own levels and challenges within life, whether it's a struggle in this moment or simply a calling to grow and wake up spiritually.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So the unique perspective, you know, though I have the background in, you know, wide variety of psychological, I was also a, you know, coach in sports. So I have physical, mental training in school. I have mental, physical, psychological, but this unique approach to this kind of meditative or consciousness approach is that the premise from these wisdom traditions is that there is this most subtle dimension of consciousness, sometimes called awake awareness or true nature, which is our ground of being, or Buddha nature, Christ consciousness, spirit within, whatever that language is from these traditions. The premise is that this is already here, equally available in each of us, as each of us, and is as close as our breath. Mm-hmm. So that was my, I said, if it's close as our breath, then why do the methods seem to require, you know, 20 years of sitting in a monastery? I discovered a couple of teachings where they were teaching how to shift into and recognize and then realize immediately, almost like a background foreground shift of what was primary.
Mm-hmm. You know, you hit on a good point there that I thought for many years when I first started studying spirituality and meditation, that when you read about it or you go to spiritual teachers, there were a lot of people who seemed to be teaching for many years a very specific method, you had to sit a certain way, breathe a certain way, hold your body in a certain way. You know, and through my own experiences and what I got from your book as well, which was a reaffirmation of that, is that there's really many paths to awakening, many paths to, there's no one right way to meditate. There's no one right way to lead towards awakening.
Yes. And I guess the only other thing I would add to that would be that it's there's many ways that you can get caught in cul-de-sacs for long periods of time. So in other words, you know, there's many doorways right now that are a variety of ways. But the unique thing is that you can literally almost discover how to shift out of the cloud of your mind, as if you think you're in a storm cloud. And your awareness can literally, instead of cleaning up that cloud and using a broom and a vacuum cleaner and replacing, positive thoughts, you know, having them replace negative thoughts, is literally to step back or drop down or open up until you discover and actually become this sky awareness, this big sky mind, and then as the sky, you can come back and include your body, thoughts, feelings, and sensations while remaining both open and subtle. And by doing that, you immediately, the whole context shifts from a contracted, separate sense of self to this spacious, interconnected dimension of our being, which people tend to think, oh, only the special few can do this, only those gurus, only if you do this or that. So the amazing thing is pretty much 90% of people walk off the street can have a glimpse of this, which is a short, not meditation state, but actually a direct shifting into this so that they report, they start sounding like, you know, they're Lao Tzu or something. They start speaking from this consciousness as if it's just, you know, obvious. The last person said, "Oh, this is just so obvious. Why isn't this on the map of what we've been learning?"
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I thought that made your book really accessible is that a person can be at a different, any kind of level of belief system and benefit from the practices that you write in the book. I mean, you could take if any of our listeners out there are in a traditional, then the exercises and practices I think would actually support your belief system.
Yes.
You write well in your book about tapping into the works of folks like Andrew Newberg and others who have shown the value of meditation and spiritual practices on a scientific basis. And so for those people who look at life as all matter, I think there's a benefit as well. And then there's the, you know, spiritual but not religious group who tend to move through tasting and touching kinds of things, which may be the prime audience for your stuff. But I think there's methods and an opening to every person, no matter where they are. Even people who may be profound atheists out there can have this awake awareness experience through some of the glimpses that enter in your book.
Yes, no doubt. It's really, as I kind of have come to see, is that, you know, it's almost as if people can have any fundamental view, worldview, religious beliefs, and yet we all have this human consciousness in common. Mm-hmm. And so that's the focus, that commonality. I sometimes call it the human being lineage, mm-hmm. rather than any particular lineage of a religion, but that human being lineage has these wisdom traditions of meditative shifts of consciousness and awareness that have been reported by these wise gals and wise guys to bring forth something that's been hidden or obscured or covered over by denser instincts and emotions or faster moving thoughts that we're looking to or external events. And when we discover kind of the key or the tuner to tune into this subtlest, broadest, widest, highest sense of being, then when that is primary, there's a source of support and unconditional love that is who we are, rather than trying to get there through effort or through belief or through thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I felt was very poignant in your book is you say that as humans, awareness is so essential to who we are.
Yes.
Yet we often keep all of our focus on the contents of awareness rather than awareness itself. And yes. you point us towards coming to know and experience awareness and call that as, you know, one of the next important steps. In fact, you call it to develop what you call awake awareness.
That's right.
My question really is, why do you see that developing this understanding of the basis of awareness is important as human beings? And why, what is awake awareness? How is that different or from just regular awareness?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's kind of the beginning of my book. I start there as the foundation. And what it feels like is that it's not attention. So people use the word attention, consciousness and awareness almost as if they're the same word. And so by adding awake awareness to awareness, I'm pointing to something that's aware in children prior to conceptual consciousness. I'm pointing to a kind of awareness that you feel that's just alert and aware without your help. So it's almost, you almost, instead of trying to train your awareness to be in control, you shift kind of back and down and open out until you feel as if you're resting back as an awareness that's looking forward. So you discover a kind of primordial awareness that people know when they go into nature, or when they're, some people, when they're even driving a car, or with friends, where you relax and you're not trying, you're not controlling, you're not efforting. There's something that's aware by itself that actually is more intelligent, more supportive, and it's what meditation is trying to get to by calming thoughts and, you know, using one-pointed focus or observing contents of thoughts to realize, oh, I'm not the contents. So then what I do in these glimpses is, rather than just remaining the witness of the contents, it's almost resting back or turning around or looking back until you tune in or discover an awareness, that awareness has your back, that there's actually literally awareness behind your back that's feeling into your body and looking out of your heart. And when you can kind of discover that, which is what many of the glimpses are about. So talking about it is one thing, but pretty much most people, I can guide them through a couple quick exercises and they'll report that this awareness is awake and alert and yet is not looking to thought to know, to be here, to be clear. And it's not some esoteric state. It literally is like, oh, I remember this when I was four. Oh, I remember this when I was most happy. Oh, that's why I go mountain climbing. Oh, that's why. So people discover they don't have to do something to get it, that they just learn how to surrender or relax or let go or tune in to this primordial awareness that's also kind of a wisdom consciousness that can use thought, but it's not based in thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not tied to the meditation cushion either, from what you're describing. It's really something where you can develop a state that actually enhances your beingness in the material world, if you can live from this state of awareness.
Yeah, it's the foundation of what's often called the flow state. So rather than, I mean, it can, you know, the meditation tradition, the first series of practices is where, you know, most people I meet are still in that cul-de-sac of one-pointed awareness or subtle body kind of bliss or focusing on contents. And those, you usually have to keep your eyes closed. It's better if you retreat into a quiet place. You withdraw. Whereas this, you actually start with your eyes open and you kind of shift into what people call a flow state, or into the zone. So you're actually immediately getting your brain on board to this awareness, and you actually are more optimally connected. You're less defensive, more responsive than reactive, and feeling open-hearted, non-judgmental, but also, you know, able to respond and say no or yes, or use your discriminating intelligence when needed. But otherwise, when you relax and just listen, you're in kind of a, you know, peace of mind is your baseline. Mm-hmm. And embodied, kind of an embodied, you know your body from within your body.
How people hearing this are probably going to immediately think in terms of the terms such as enlightenment or becoming awakened. How does that fit into your concept of awake awareness and the skills that you're teaching people to develop through your glimpses?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the interesting thing is that many of these glimpses I learned from, the first teacher I learned it from was a Tibetan teacher who had done three-year retreats in, and then he was taught this kind of what's called pointing out instruction or glimpsing practice. And interestingly, he was now teaching it to anybody who asked, because he said that, he said, well, when I was 8 years old, my uncle showed me this, and I got it right away. And then after three-year retreats, it wasn't any different. So I, you know, he was almost laughing as if, I don't know if I even needed to do that, because there's something natural that's here, even to those who are young, and it kind of cuts through the conditioning. So it does lead to what's called awakening. I talk about kind of waking up from a kind of self-centered point of view, which is kind of a looping pattern of chattering thought that creates a thinker that's like a little mini me looking out of your eyes that thinks it's you, and it becomes almost a feeling of an entity. And so you kind of shift out of that into this awareness, but you don't stop at kind of the gap of not knowing. You go right into this awake awareness, which then comes back into the cloud, into your body, and forms a kind of awakened ordinariness that's just not centered in this mental manager. So you feel very much in the flow and awakened from the kind of self-centered ego point of view, but your ego function is still, you know, just fine and very helpful. Your personality is still there. So it's not like detaching and living in a kind of a false shutdown way. You actually get more access to your emotional life, and you can really feel more intimate with yourself and your own emotions, more sensitive, because you're not reactive. You're not living from a small, separate sense of self. So it is, ultimately, it's almost like I kept asking the questions you're asking. Well, what are you talking about, enlightenment? What is awakening? What are you awakening from? What are you awakening to? And then I kind of, like a good American, you know, kind of like, let's get to the facts here. You know, let's find out, what do you really mean? I kind of followed it out and was willing to ask and look for myself and kind of made this contemporary map for people, because it's natural, because it's ordinary, why not access it directly?
You know, I know for many Americans, when they hear the terms enlightenment, they immediately conjure up the picture of some person going up in the mountains and sitting there and meditating until all of a sudden at one moment, you know, they were not enlightened, and then they were enlightened, and it happened in a flash of a second, and then all of a sudden they were, filled with the power of seeing the light of the universe and awareness of what all the universe was about, and it's all of its interconnectedness. You know, and I know when I was younger, I had that sort of thought too, but over as I've gotten wiser, I've come to realize that spiritual growth and enlightenment or waking up is although for some it can be that flash or that, for many of us, it's more of a gradual thing that people, and I think that's helpful for people to realize that, because then when they don't get that flash immediately and they're practicing,
yes,
what they tend to forget is that the practicing is like building up a muscle. It's like all of a sudden, if they look back to where they were, you know, 2 months or 2 years ago, they have come so much farther along their spiritual path and understanding, but they haven't had that immediate flash, and they keep chasing it like it's some, you know, elusive dream or something.
Yes. Well, I mean, I would respond in kind of an interesting way to what you said, because in some ways there's a need for a rebuilding of a habit. So practice is very important and helpful in kind of its breaking of the old habit. But the other interesting thing is that you can do these preliminary practices so much that you actually are only doing so much. You're only doing push-ups, let's say, and actually what you're trying to do is get ready to walk up a mountain. So you're strengthening your arms, but you really haven't gotten to the next stage. And that this approach, the style that I, from the wisdom traditions, is often called small glimpses many times. So there's the many times, which is the gradual, but the small glimpses is literally as if you can intentionally access that moment of awakening here and now, and that it's those moments that are actually the flashes that, because they take you out of the hypnosis of your own egoic dream state and shift you almost how it has to happen is what I call it unhooking, because you can't stretch it, you can't try it, you can't build it. You've got to leave one system of consciousness and step right into the other. That's why they use the word surrender or let go or turnover or shift or disidentify. That movement, most people are waiting around for that. And even there's a lot of teachings, oh, well, it'll take a lot of practice to get there. Or the next one is, oh, it's only by luck. Or the third one is, well, it can't be done intentionally, it's only by grace. So my sense in this tradition that I'm in is grace is already here. It's everywhere, like your breath. And you can intentionally, in a moment, shift from your unenlightened to this enlightened dimension of your consciousness, remain there until you lose it, and then you say to yourself, oh, no big surprise, and you just re-recognize again. And by that practice of literally not trying to clean away the cloud, but stepping out of the cloud into the awake, already aware nature, you become familiar with that, and eventually it becomes primary over time. So it's just a little different approach, sometimes called direct recognition and gradual unfolding, rather than gradual practice that leads to sudden awakening.
Sounds great. What I want to do is, we're going to take a break here, Locke, but when we come back, maybe if you could give us a couple of examples when
sure.
we return of some of these glimpses, and that will help our listeners to make this a little more concrete in their awareness. This is Mark Gilbert with Conscious Bridge Radio, and we are talking with author and spiritual teacher Locke Kelly about his new book, Shift into Freedom, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Debbie Lynn Molyneux, president of Coffee Party USA. I hope you're enjoying this program, which is part of the Coffee Party's radio network of shows. Have you ever wondered exactly what is the Coffee Party? Well, have you ever brought up the subject of politics and watched as people roll their eyes? Well, Coffee Party is an all-volunteer nonprofit to encourage respectful conversation around politics. We want people to connect with each other in a more meaningful way. Coffee Party supports reforms of our electoral, campaign finance, government accountability, and tax systems. We also promote cultural changes to address political disengagement, polarization, and misinformation. Won't you come join us? Check out our website and find out how you can get involved as a member and a volunteer of Coffee Party USA today. Help bring civility and reason back to our political process. Go to coffeepartyusa.com to find out more. That's coffeepartyusa.com. Thank you.
Hi, Mark Gilbert again. I hope you're enjoying this radio program. I invite you to also check out the Conscious Bridge website at www.consciousbridge.com or see the link on the radio program's website. There, I've been sharing my exploration of the evolution of spirituality, politics, and culture for the past 6 years. You'll find descriptions and links of all four of my books, as well as years of articles, free audios, videos, listings and links to numerous resources, and be sure and sign up for my newsletter as well. If you do, you'll get a free gift from me. All of this and a whole lot more at consciousbridge.com. Now back to our program.
Hi,
Welcome back to Conscious Bridge Radio. Mark Gilbert again here, and we are talking with author and spiritual teacher Locke Kelly. Locke is the author of the book Shift into Freedom, The Science and Practice of Open-Hearted Awareness. Before the break, we were talking about the glimpses, small glimpses that fills the each of the chapters towards the end of every chapter. He has one or two of these practices. I've noticed, Locke, as well, that you've got some of them recorded and out on your website or out on YouTube so people can listen to some of the practices as well. But I'd like maybe if you could just give us an example or two of some of the glimpses that that you have found useful or you think could easily be shared with our listeners to give them a sense of what these small glimpses are that can lead someone to developing a sense of awake awareness.
Sure. I'm happy to. This there's an audio that goes with my book, and it's not an audio of the book. It's actually just 31 glimpse practices with some introductions. So this is the heart of the whole book. Is really the book is pointing toward how to do this. And so the first premise I was talking a bit about before is this, that the obscuration to this natural awake awareness is this kind of orientation that we've developed, I think just developmentally, to become a thinker, to orient ourselves to this self-centered sense behind our eyes. And that little pattern of looping thought starts to almost feel like it's an entity or it's an I or a little me, and it actually almost feels like it's got like it takes our body's survival program and boundary program and starts to feel as if, oh, I've got to get some nourishment to survive, I've got to get things to be okay, I've got to keep things away, but there's no threat to it because it's only a thought, and there's nothing to eat. There's no nourishment because it's only a thought. It can't get anything. So there's perpetual problem solving going on, perpetual dissatisfaction, which is actually the definition of suffering in Buddhism, is this word dukkha means perpetual dissatisfaction. And so what's perpetually dissatisfied is not you, the personality, although that's what it feels like. But when this little problem solver relaxes, you'll see, you may see in this moment that what's here is very much free and able to be awake and aware. So we'll just do a little glimpse by just while you're listening, just understand this inquiry, which is a simple question to ask yourself. What's here now when there's no problem to solve on the level of identity? So it's not about the problems in the world or anything like that. It's really this problem solver that thinks there's a huge problem of who I am. So again, just ask yourself this question and look with awareness. What's here now? What's aware when there's no problem to solve just now? And just let the problem solver relax and let your awareness feel into the awareness that remains. And if you don't go up to thought and don't go down to sleep, just notice what's absent that was here, and then notice some qualities of presence that begin to show up. What's this like, this feeling of awareness and being? So usually I'll have people at this point kind of speak up from the floor, and they'll start saying there's kind of a openness or a sense of peace of mind, an absence of anxiety or worry, a kind of fullness of safety or love, a feeling of interconnection, variety of things like this that you may be experiencing as you listen to this. But the unique thing is that in just a moment of not orienting by that problem solver and letting awareness feel into your body and into the awareness within and all around, there's kind of a natural awake awareness that's primary. And getting a feel for that really is the unique immediate shift that's possible.
You know, this is one lock that I've actually been playing with since I've been reading your book.
Okay.
I haven't done all of the glimpses yet. I do want to go back and practice them all. But this one struck me because it was an immediate way to get to that sense of stepping back into a witness consciousness, to immediately get out of the sense of identifying myself with this body and all of the doingness that I'm in the midst of. So that it reminds me that even though I know this and I live from a place that I am more than this body, that I am an eternal being who is a part of the oneness of the universe and have experienced that in so many ways. So often we can get so busy in life, and it's a quick way to. So I've been using this one almost as a mantra. I'll just track it, traffic, and I'll ask that question.
That's it. Beautiful. Yeah, it literally is. And you notice, Mark, that it really is, you know, that you are able to intentionally shift through this little pointer, little inquiry, into that experience which you've had before of oneness and of unity and from, you know, laughter, and yet you're in the middle of driving a car. You can still drive a car. You're not spaced out, or you're actually living from, you know, your best nature, but you're doing it from being most upset or most contracted, and then within moments this pointer takes you home.
You know, but then I've got to tell you, on the flip side, there were a couple of your glimpses that I personally struggle with, and maybe it's my own where I am with my own growth. And there was an aspect of them where you want to get into dropping, I think is the term that you use.
Yeah, there's one way to drop or step back, or you want to step out. So some people, it's easier for them to drop down from head to heart. Others kind of come from thinking to hearing to the space in which sound is coming and going. Others literally drop behind their back or behind your heart, which is where a lot of your senses are not pointed, to get this feel of this subtlest dimension of awareness that's not thought-based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes we're so wedded to feeling like we are these beings who are staring out through our eyes.
Right.
That it's difficult to let go of perspective.
That's right.
I know that some of your glimpses, you know, I called for you to shift from seeing out of your eyes to say seeing. The one that worked best for me, I've got to tell you, was the one where you shifted down to your nostrils and became aware of the breath coming in and out. And I don't know if it was because that was close to my eyes, but
yeah.
But then trying to drop down lower was I found it a little more difficult for me to get there.
Down through your chin and through your throat and through your body, yeah.
And to feel like my awareness is coming from that other location.
Right. Now, how about when you shifted to your nostrils and then shift to hearing at one of your ears? So why don't we do another little one that will go kind of – and again, it's almost like you don't need to know how to do this because your awareness is doing it. You're not doing it. It may be new, but you just kind of – to see what happens, and some people find one easier and others find others easier.
Okay, so
if you just start with your awareness in its usual place, wherever that is, usually it's in your head and behind your eyes and identified with thinking, and just shift from what in Buddhism thinking is considered the sixth sense. So it's just one of the senses. It's not who you are. So awareness is identified with thinking, and then it shifts to breathing at one or both of your nostrils. And so it unhooks from thinking and just moves to your senses, to breathing. And even there can be a relief for a moment. But then not getting caught in too much calm, just as it unhooked from thinking and came to sensing at your nostrils. See whether you can have that awareness unhook from your breathing and move to one of your ears. So now you move from breathing to hearing. So now that opens up a whole world of hearing as primary. And just be interested in that small area of sensation, vibration, and awareness in that one small area of one or both of your ears. And then just as this awareness can get small, notice what it's like when awareness opens to become interested in the space all around, the space to the side of your head. So it opens, awareness can open to this movement of sound, but then notice what it's like if awareness becomes interested in the space, the contentless space in which sound is moving. So just no object, no subject, no focus, just awareness aware of itself as spacious awareness. Just resting for a moment until you're almost like air goes into air or awareness goes into awareness until it discovers that there's an awareness that's already aware from all around. So you can kind of be curious, am I aware of the spacious awareness, or what is it like if I'm actually aware from the spacious awareness? If the spacious awareness, as the spacious awareness, what's it like to be aware of thoughts, feelings, and sensations while remaining open? So feeling this continuous field of awareness that's open and spacious and pervasive now, continuous, so you're equally outside and within, and you've kind of dropped from head to heart also, so you feel like a field of awareness that's subtle and physical and just not going up to thought, but remaining alert and embodied. Just see what that's like to include everything without going up to thought to create a manager. And for many people, it's a relief. To feel as if you know your body from within, the aliveness, the effervescence, the space, the awareness inside and out. And that shift from inner to outer, from outer back to inner, brings you into this dimension of consciousness that is kind of a oneness or a unity. Not sure if you have a feeling of that.
Yes, I did. And I think what helps is that because of having had it previously,
yes,
I was able to get into the sense of the similarities that I experienced previously. Although in this moment, I would be less than totally honest if I didn't admit I'm also aware that we're in the middle of taping this program.
Right. Yeah, they call it radio silence, even though in meditation they call it a good thing, right?
Right. It's one of those things where I think the recording and the practicing is going to be very good, and it, it can be very beneficial. And I think that your glimpses in the many of them that are in your book or on your recording can assist all of our readers. So this hopefully will give them a small taste of what we're talking about and that how it can be beneficial for them. I know for me it's a matter of living more calmly and peacefully in daily life, less attached to the outcomes of what's going on around me, being more in a sense of care and concern for people, more of a sense of love for others. There's a lot of benefits, I think, that come from developing these skills. And your book is so practical that I can't recommend it enough to people. There are many, many exercises there that if one doesn't work for you, try another one.
Yes, that's right. Thank you so much, Mark. Yeah, that's right. It's just there's different learning styles. There's different doorways. There's different people who are more kinesthetic or emotional style or, you know, intellectual style or intuitive. And I kind of have practices for each doorway and for each way that people get blocked. And it all leads to the same simple, like you said, recognition of something you've already known. So when you realize that you can re-recognize this, which you had as an extraordinary experience, you start to realize, oh, this is the ordinary nature of who I am, and I can return home. So it's this little tuner that you I was introducing you to, this awareness that can move from head to breath, from breath to hearing, from hearing to space, from space to spacious awareness. And then as spacious awareness, it includes and becomes the primary awake dimension of consciousness that has this feeling of oneness and unity, interconnectedness, open-heartedness that is often called the heart-mind. So there's an ability to, not space out and not bliss in, but really feel like you're vital and in the flow. And that's really possible, to learn this kind of way to shift your own consciousness in the middle of your day.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the underlying themes of Conscious Bridge is the exploration of our evolution.
Yes.
And I'm curious how you see the experience of developing the ability to have this sense of awake awareness fits both our personal and collective evolution as a species.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I say that, awakening is the next natural stage of human development. It's not an esoteric thing for just a few, that in some ways, even what I describe as the problem or the obscuration is this separate sense of self. And I go developmentally and evolutionarily describe that there's this creation at the age of 1.5 to 3 years old where we get this sense of what's actually interestingly called self-awareness, which is the ability to see yourself as a separate person. But the way that it's created is this thinking about thinking. And when the thinking about thinking function, which is very important, starts to create a thinker and we locate ourselves in this small sense of self, that's the evolutionary level that has helped us get out of the early primitive stage, but now it's become almost the creator of anxiety, the creator of depression, the creator of overthinking and overplanning and judgmental nature, which thinks it's a separate self that needs to get ahead and only its tribe should be, in first place and it should, do anything it can. Whereas the evolution is to open-hearted awareness. The evolution is shifting out of that small sense of self into this spacious dimension, which is already available. And then when we come back, we discover that these qualities of loving kindness and wisdom are already capacities that we have. And when we're there in this oneness and unity, we feel differently toward others, and we're willing to use our intelligence that we've kind of trained in different ways to apply that in solving issues of communication and conflict and making, hopefully making progress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the steps too, of course, which we haven't talked about is the, at least in these terms, is the moving out of our identification with the ego.
Yes.
And you know, it's been my own personal experience that it's very easy for us to get seduced into the material world and the stroking of our personal ego and making ourselves feel very important and trying to accumulate wealth and power and whatever other things are going to make our ego feel good. But, you know, these types of practices and what you're teaching in terms of the waking up or developing a sense of transcendence really is honoring and using our egos for the evolutionary tool they have been useful for in terms of moving through this human physical experience, but transcending them to a higher level, to something that's greater, that knows and recognizes that we're all interconnected and we're all here to support one another. So, you know, I think back to some of the models of evolution, and I wrote a book on spiritual evolution a while back.
Okay, yeah.
And for me, a lot of it is returning from a sense of separation back to a sense of unity.
That's right.
And that to me is our evolutionary path on an individual basis. But it's also, when we take it collectively, we can look around the planet and see people who are stuck in their ego identification, stuck in sense of smallness or separation. And practices such as these that you're teaching, Locke, are crucial to moving people beyond that sense of separation and into that sense of unity that I think is the next logical step in human evolution.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah, I agree completely. That's the amazing thing is that rather than even, having been in the different peace movements and things, you can also see how even the ego can get a hold of ideas like we need to be unified, we need to get together, we need to do things in the way that's best. You know, so the interesting thing about this practice is when you shift you're not just shifting out of negative thinking, you're shifting out of all thinking into something that's a higher wisdom, that is a subtler dimension of consciousness that's already seeing unity, that when you're there, you see unity, you see oneness, and it's just like, oh yeah, right, no big deal, that's the way it is, that's the way I perceive. Therefore, you feel like, well, let's all just listen to each other and work together, and you feel motivated from a new motivation rather than trying to save the world or trying to even do some things that seem good. You literally evolve into your best self by shifting into that which has been covered over and is already always here.
Yeah. And there's a sense too that when you wake up and, you know, to use Wilbur's terms also, grow up, clean up, show up, that there's a sense that waking up calls you to higher levels of care and concern for humans. It develops a new sense of love within you, what love really is, that you move through a pattern of letting go of seeing love simply as the old standard of romantic love, but a transcendent love that connects you with all humans. And the point I'm getting at here in the question for you is that it also calls us to a level of service. It calls us to not leave the world,
but
to come back into the world from a different perspective. But you want to be a positive change agent.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah, that's kind of one of my main motivations for eventually writing a book about this is feeling like I had an experience of transcendence and a kind of unity consciousness and saw a lot of people there, and then realized somehow when I came back into my body that was really the return, you know, not just the transcendence but the immanence, not just the discovery of pure awareness but the embodiment. And so I started to call it waking up from the ego identification into the awake awareness, and then waking down into your body, and then waking out into relationship and creativity. So it's kind of waking up, waking in, waking down, waking out. So there's this movement that many people stop at the initial waking up, and they kind of feel like there's a relief in this disembodiment or kind of meditative states that you can only remain in for so long. And then when you come back, you have to operate from your ego until you have enough time to go back into retreat again. And so this is really, you know, transcending in order to include and be fully human. So the full awakening is being fully human. Full awakening is waking up and growing up and including all parts of yourself. And even the last chapters of my book is about working with sub-personalities and repressed content and shadow parts from this open-hearted awareness. Because when you have the capacity and the support of this loving dimension of your consciousness, you can actually liberate a lot of the trauma and the feelings that couldn't be, that were unbearable before you had this capacity.
Locke, we're getting towards the end of the program here, but I wanted to just give our listeners a sense of, you know, how else they can connect with you, what all you're working on. The you know, we've been talking with author and spiritual teacher Locke Kelly about his book, Shift into Freedom, The Science and Practice of Open-Hearted Awareness. The book is available through all the bookstores out there. There's a link to the book on the radio site's webpage. I encourage listeners to check it out. It's a very powerful book with lots of practical tips. And you've also mentioned the audio with all of the exercises. But you've got your website, lockkelly.org, and your institute, classes, other offerings from you. What should people want to know if they want to find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of built it in a way to make it as simple as possible for people by having a book, which is kind of a textbook. It really outlines exactly how this connects with from wisdom traditions to neuroscience to psychology and psychotherapy, and simplifies a lot of the methods. And then the audio is just the methods with some introductions. But there are series, short series of 3 to 8 minute guided practices. And then I have, then I'm traveling around the country and offering retreats that people can come to, mostly at this point just weekend long or day long. And then I have some courses online which kind of unpack and where I explain some of the practices in a 4-week format, an eight week format that, you know, can help people understand what am I saying, and has a little feedback from students who are there, some question and answer. So those are kind of the offerings available now.
Very good. Anything I have not asked you about that you think is essential for our listeners to know about in this day?
I think what you said at the end, our last piece about waking up and growing up, of including not just transcending, but really embodying and living an open-hearted life, that it's possible to live in the world with your eyes open in a way that you feel the qualities that you've been seeking in meditation, but they're become the new normal. And then that you're able to work with repressed contents and sub-personalities and feelings, shadow, begin to liberate, and you become, you know, this energies return to their natural condition. You become more energized and more loving and more able to respond to other people, more creative, less reactive. It's just a natural capacity that is possible, and that I, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people begin, you know, to live this way, and it's very ordinary. It's not a strange esoteric thing. It's kind of everyone does it in their own unique way.
Beautifully said. And if the words that Locke just described resonate with our listeners, and that sounds like the type of life that you're called to, I encourage you to check out his book, Shift into Freedom, and also his website. And you all can find all of that from lockkelly.org. The link is on the website to the radio program. Thank you so much for being with us today, Locke.
Thank you, Mark. This is really delightful to speak with you. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I did as well. And thanks to everyone out there listening to the program. Thanks for joining in on Conscious Bridge Radio. And I hope to have you listening next time. So till then, take care.